Are you a KBOO member? Tell us why you support KBOO. Call our listener testimonial line and leave a message telling us why you support KBOO Community Radio. Testimonials will be used on air during our next membership drive. Call 503-231-8032, extension 302. That's 503-231-8032, extension 302. Thanks.
Welcome to the Talking Earth. Walt Curtis, your host, with my beloved engineer, Patrick Bouchard. And what do you think about those voices? They have a right to be heard, too. But today, this program, it's social distancing. Help me with that, Patrick. Say hello, Patrick.
Yeah. It is social distancing, which pack animals don't do well with.
Let's keep it funny.
We don't have any like sounds of what, you know, feral cats. I guess they don't social distance very much.
I'm not going to go there. I know you have a wonderful cat, but listen, there's a disclaimer on this program because the great Lawrence Ferlinghetti of City Lights book died, I guess, just before his 102nd birthday. There are different hosts on the Talking Earth, and we're going to talk about the pledge drive a little bit. But Dan had given some homage to Ferlinghetti, but this is going to be a lot of his voice, and we're going to move through it. And usually, there are a lot of other characters, that I put on here because this is a program about voice. So, I met Ferlinghetti several times, and I met him in his bookstore there at City Lights, and he was changing a light bulb, and he was so darn, and I there was a Portlander there. You know, in life, there are things that happen. They just count. Because a Portlander was there, I didn't leave the store. So he was changing a light bulb, and I had my silly book, Peckerneck Country, that Joel Weinstein had done, and I just handed it to him. And he was so darn nice. About 10 minutes later, he came out, and I was only there because of the Portlander, and he said, "Walt, art thou a Whitman?" And good luck to you. And then he handed me some of his postcards that, you know, he painted. He was in very good shape and a very nice guy. And he said, "Good luck to you, Portland poet," or, you know, "City of Portland." And so everyone has commented about how nice he basically has been and how cosmopolitan he has basically been. And so I want to show some of this on the program here. But and I'd been to North Beach a number of times, to City Lights, the infamous bar Vesuvio's, and Ferlinghetti would be later elected poet laureate of San Francisco, and he brought about different alleyways. There was the Jack Kerouac drunken alleyway where Jack hung out, and many of the streets are named for various people. Patrick, I want to comment just about how we try so hard on this program, but Barbara Lamorticello was at last month on her Talking Earth.
Oh, no, she's doing a show a week from today.
Yeah, but when she did the Bob Kaufman, City Lights, it was a brilliant program.
Yeah.
And there actually was a guy, I'm trying to get his name right, but I don't think I'm going to try. now, but he's been there many years, and he rescued Bob Kaufman, Golden Sardines, a wonderful poet who actually came to the poetic hoo-ha. This is too much palaver, but what about the pledge? Why don't we give the stats on that? They're trying to raise $60,000. KBOO is during the month of April, and I think we're going to do it. But all of you must realize what an incredible community radio station this is, and there are various hosts, some not as crack-brained as I am. But what do you? What are some of your comments about pledge?
First, I would say that you can donate on the website kboo.org.
Dot give. kbo.fm/give.
kbo.fm/give. See, so hopefully no one out there is as confused as I am about that. it's a great community resource. It's been going, surviving the pandemic, and we need to keep it going. So please,
$5 or $10. You can have electric funds transfer. It's easy to do. $5 or $10.
I do $10.
And you won't even notice it, and you can stop it anytime you want.
It's a lot better than my phone bill, which they automatically take out now too, even though I told them not to.
Let's not worry about that. We can cut it off. But KBOO, the Talking Earth has been around for 48 or 49 years, and Barbara was at least 20 of them. And Patrick, how long have you been engineering?
I think Barbara was longer than 20 of them.
I brought her in, actually, because...
Yeah, that's got to be 30 at least. I mean, she was doing a show when I got to Portland in 92. So my math is terrible. It's like since the mid to late 90s. So it's a little over 20 years.
Let's not worry about the details. But yeah. Just as you listen to the program, please, we don't want to waste the time with this, and I need a clock here in front of me somewhere. But anyway, the point is, Patrick, repeat, Barbara LaMorticella is coming on at 10 p.m.
Next week.
What's the theme? And she's back in the saddle.
She's going to have 3 15-minute segments of poets.
Okay.
Approximately. And I'm going to, I forgot one of them already, unfortunately, but Leanne Grable is one of them. Kim Stafford is another. And there's another writer whose name I've...
Oh, let's not worry about it. We'll find that out. But that'll be 10 p.m.
She was really excited about him.
Yeah, last month, because we're a community radio station, it was Women's Day, and they decided in their wisdom, and it is real wisdom, that's not sarcastic, they had women's programming last...
Preempted.
Yeah, it was preempted. So let's... We're going to start with Ferlinghetti's voice here, because I want you to hear him. Right there?
Yeah.
Greatest scene we seem to see, the people of the world.
Coney Island.
Exactly.
Okay, this is
the moment when they first attain the title of suffering humanity. They rise upon the page in a veritable rage of adversity, heaped up, groaning with babies and bayonets under cement skies. In an abstract landscape of blasted trees, bent statues, bats' wings and beaks, slippery gibbets, cadavers, and carnivorous cars.
Lawrence Ferlinghetti.
Final hollering monsters of the imagination of disaster. They are so bloody real, it is as if they really still existed. And they do. Only the landscape is changed. They still are ranged along the roads, plagued by legionnaires, false windmills, and demented roosters. We are the same people, only further from home. On freeways, 50 lanes wide, on a concrete continent, spaced with bland billboards illustrating imbecile illusions of happiness. The scene shows fewer tumbles, but more strung-out citizens in painted cars, and they have strange license plates and engines that devour America. A Coney Island of the mind. In Goya's greatest scenes, we seem to see the people of the world. Exactly at the moment.
An abstract landscape back to one. Here. How do we move?
Trees, bent statues, bats' wings and beaks, slippery gibbets.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go. We're on a...
We are all. We got a good...
It's like a little time loop there.
Yeah, that's all we need. It was a time loop.
It's like a Marvel movie.
Coney Island of the Mind. His famous book.
Sailing through the Straits of Deimos.
Oh, no, it's not...
symbolic birds shrieking over us while eager...
This is very interesting travel. Ferlinghetti was very cosmopolitan.
...us out to sea, strumming bent mandolins and bailing for old glory with their ears, while patriotic maidens wearing paper poppies and eating bonbons ran along the shores wailing after us. And while we lashed ourselves to masts and stopped our ears with chewing gum, dying donkeys on high hills sang low songs, and gay cows flew away chanting Athenian anthems as their pods turned to tulips. And helicopters from Helios flew over us, dropping free railway tickets from Los Angeles to heaven and promising free elections, so that we set up mast and sail on that swart ship once more. And so set forth once more, forth upon the gobbly sea, loaded with liberated vestal virgins and discus throwers reading Walton. But shortly after reaching the strange suburban shores of that great American demi-democracy, looked at each other with a mild surprise, silent upon a peak in Darien.
John Keats. Let's go. Two, here. Two, three. Three. God damn it. Try a little more.
The poet's eye, obscenely seeing, sees the surface of the round world, with its drunk rooftops and wooden wazos on clotheslines, and its clay males and females with hot legs and rosebud breasts in rollaway beds, and its trees full of mysteries, and its Sunday parks and speechless statues, and its America with its ghost towns and empty Ellis Islands, and its surrealist landscape of mindless prairies, supermarkets, suburbs, steam-heated cemeteries, Cinerama holy days, and protesting cathedrals, a kiss-proof world of plastic toilet seats, Tampax and taxis, drugged store cowboys and Las Vegas virgins, disowned Indians and cinemad matrons, un-Roman senators and conscientious non-objectors, and all the other fatal, shorn-up fragments of the immigrant's dream come too true and mislaid among the sunbathers.
Four. We're gonna listen to a couple more, and then.
In a surrealist year of sandwich men and sunbathers, dead sunflowers and live telephones, housebroken politicos with party whips performed as usual in the rings of their sawdust circuses, where tumblers and human cannonballs fill the air like cries. When some cool clown pressed an inedible mushroom button and an inaudible Sunday bomb fell down, catching the president at his prayers on the 19th green. Oh, it was a spring of fir leaves and cobalt flowers, when Cadillacs fell through the trees like rain, drowning the meadows with madness, while out of every imitation cloud dropped myriad wingless crowds of nutless Nagasaki survivors, and lost teacups full of our ashes floated by.
Okay, we'll do a couple more.
sometime during eternity, some guys show up, and one of them who shows up real late is a kind of carpenter from some square-type place like Galilee. And he starts wailing and claiming he is hip to who made heaven and earth, and that the cat who really laid it on us is his dad. And moreover, he adds, it's all writ down on some scroll-type parchments, which some henchmen leave lying around the Dead Sea somewheres a long time ago, and which you won't even find for a couple of thousand years or so, or at least for 1947 of them to be exact. And even then, nobody really believes them, or me, for that matter. You're hot, they tell him. And they cool him. They stretch him on the tree.
Stretch him on a tree.
And everybody after that is always making models of this tree with him hung up and always crooning his name and calling him to come down and sit in on their combo as if he is the king cat who's got to blow. Or they can't quite make it. Only he don't come down.
He don't come down.
Him just hang there on his tree, looking real petered out and real cool. And also, according to a roundup of late world news, from the usual unreliable sources, real dead.
He's dead, man. Okay. Can we stop it? Pause it? Go ahead, dude. That pause? We don't need pause. We'll go to six. But, okay, so that's the voice of Ferlinghetti. I want to give you 2 or 3 minutes. When did you meet the Boots, Patrick?
When did I meet the Boots?
Or when did you think about them? Make it quick, though. 3, 4 minutes.
Well, I mean, I didn't,
Well, you said you did a parody of Ginsberg.
Yeah, but that was later on. I mean, I kind of, read Ginsberg. I first heard his stuff in college. I didn't read, the other Beats very much other than Burroughs, though, in college.
Well, we got to talk about it.
I really loved it. I loved all the Beats and were all about it. And I never really got into it that much in college. But the thing is when I left college and I was like writing, one of the first things I wrote that people actually liked was called We Bring Good Things to Half-Life. And it sounded like a combination of a GE commercial and like a Ginsberg poem.
Okay, well, do you want to share a little bit of that?
Unfortunately, I...
Well, let's not unfortunate anything. We're running out of time. You do what you want to do. I want you... You want to read a Coney Island or anything? Just hurry, though.
This is another poem.
What is it called? And where?
Saudi America.
Oh, Saudi America. Oh, Saudi, not Sodom America. But
Saudi America, yes.
Okay, Saudis and...
I am so glad I have 2 states to insult instead of one. A 2-for-1 sale since both are half-assed.
Yeah, we're not going to wear this out. But go
Saudi
ahead.
America, you overbreeder state, how dare you behead men and beat them on ghetto streets for the love that should speak its name? Saudi America, stop blaming single mothers and start paying child support like the deadbeat dad that you are. Your oil still works better than your contraceptives. Saudi America, how many heads have you collected in Chop Chop Square? How many suffer in the Gulag Americano? Is that Ginsberg's head rolling in Riyadh? Burroughs bears his barbaric yawp each day in San Quentin. Saudi America, your dictatorship brings more peace to the world than your democracy. Your greatest achievement is to prove that God could smell that bad in 3 different languages. My strongest ambition is to be Grand Mullah despite the fact that I am agnostic. Saudi America, I would be worried for your safety, but your terrorists are products of the American educational system.
Well, listen, you know, I like it. And so you were parodying Ginsberg's poem and
I was playing with it. I mean, I was like, also, it's going
well, we know Sodom and Gomorrah. We know We know the Saudis are actually quite deeply into sodomy, but...
Well, no, it wasn't about that. It was an attack on both the United States and Saudi Arabia, because this is, like, after... I mean, what are the hypocrisy after 9/11, basically?
Do you think the Beats really changed American voice? I think they did. I think Ginsburg single-handedly.
They did. And, yeah, Ginsburg probably did more in terms of exposure. Ferlinghetti, I did visit City Lights books, and that is
everyone to go there.
And it was so important to have a small, independent, and
righto,
pretty much free place that published and sold like books and got away from like the sterile culture of the 1950s, and that's what the Beats were, changing.
So we're saying City Lights and Lawrence Ferlinghetti, and you need to know how important that is. You can still go to North Beach, and you can still go there and visit, and you can get engaged.
And you're better off going there than, say, going to the Statue of Liberty and getting stuck inside the Statue of Liberty for 5 hours.
Was that you?
No, I never did that. But my wife did go to City Lights Books. She went there, and she was walking up the stairs, and guess who's coming down? And she didn't know he was there. Her father.
Oh,
they were both visiting San Francisco at the same time and didn't know it, and they both ran into each other at City Lights Books.
Okay, we're how many minutes are we at?
23 minutes.
But pledge KBOO, you'll never hear it. We're going to give you more. We're going to give you more of Ferlinghetti, but we're going to give you a little bit of a Garrison Keillor interview. But I brought a lot of his books, Coney Island of the Mind. Actually, what he says in his interview with Garrison Keillor is that they sold 500,000 pocketbooks that used to be $1, and they're not $1 anymore.
No.
But the pocketbook is a great phenomenon, and they did some obscure people, and I think it was the sophistication of Lawrence Ferlinghetti. He did Jacques Prévert, and he translated from the French, and we have no idea how cosmopolitan. And to lose him, he's not lost, even though he's transitioned onward. City Lights book. The only other, I'd like to give a little information, but I don't want to turn this program into a lecture. The KBOO, The Talking Earth, Walt Curtis, Patrick Bocard, my engineer. But what we're trying to celebrate Lawrence Ferlinghetti, and Coney Island of the Mind was the first important book, but traveling from here to there, I have them all here. We have all of this. I have all this for the lecture. I simply am going to bring up something else, but we could play, one of the strange things, Patrick, we'll make this quick. It's one of those terrible Curtis asides, is that I was with a young person, and they don't know the Beats.
Yeah.
I had an R. Crumb book. He helped me with getting a new record player, he didn't know who R. Crumb was. He didn't, it was not putting him down.
Yeah.
And he thought many of the records that I have, these old vinyl and trashed and thrashed, he called them oldies, probably called Bob Dylan oldie. Just respond to that. I mean, there's a generation.
The thing that's weird about that, though.
Yeah, talk about it. I want to talk a little bit.
I mean, there is a certain amount of that, and then but then you also got to remember that he'll be listening to music by people who have, listened to those records. And not only have they listened to those records, I mean, they don't do it as much because of the rights issues and because of the way they do copyright in the United States now. But...
Yeah, and you work in a music store, yeah.
They sample that stuff and bury it within the music. And they're influenced by stuff that came before. I mean, that's what...
I believe they are.
Record stores and find the oldies that you don't know, and they're like, yeah, using it.
Well, you're in the music business, yeah.
Like, for instance, Wu-Tang Clan, they're using a lot of Mancini soundtracks. There were horror movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's like a lot.
Give me a little more of this. You work in a record store.
A lot of the harsh strings are like, but that's from like back in the late 90s and early 2000s.
Okay, well, let's not do the whole history of this. We got to stay with him.
The issue is that the copyright laws are different, and now the people like JC make their own beats. So I don't know how much they're doing like that, but they do know the.
You mean the sampling and the hip hop and all that?
Yeah, they do know that a lot of them do know the history. Some of them don't, you know. But a lot of regular people don't know the history of.
The young people do not seem to know about the beats. So let's Jack Kerouac, Ferlinghetti on the road. Jack Kerouac, I have his voice. We're going to run out of time here. Ginsberg, they were a breath of fresh air, and they hung out with Bob Dylan, and they had the Rolling Thunder review. Ginsberg was so politically powerful. I personally would say that, but what. Ferlinghetti will say here, and I'm going to put on some of that in a minute here, but he would say that the year before when he did the Allen Ginsberg Howl, I've seen the best minds of my generation strung out, looking for an angry fix at dawn. That pocketbook cost a dollar, so you can just put it in your hip pocket, and now it's probably a $10 book. Who knows? But Ferlinghetti said he sold 500,000 copies. That saved the bookstore, City Lights Books. I think, this issue, generational issue, and who doesn't know what? I mean, this is not a nostalgia program, but some people never go away. Joan Baez or Billie Holiday or Shakespeare or John Keats or Ginsberg, and it's really sad to me. I what I want to do with this program, and I hope it go find some Ferlinghetti and read him out loud. He's an out loud poet, and we're going to let him rattle on here. In fact, we'll let him rattle a little bit, and Patrick, this is the homage to Lawrence Ferlinghetti, who died at 101. But he lives so strongly. So we'll do a cut, and I think I'm going to sample it. So let's do it.
They were putting up the statue of St. Francis in front of the Church of St. Francis in the city of...
No.
Which one are you playing?
Oh, that was the city of St. Francis. Go ahead. We're going to make some glitches
hit,
here.
Hit that.
Which one?
Of San Francisco. In a little side street just off the avenue.
No, here's San Francisco, Bohemian.
The sun was coming up on time in its usual fashion and just beginning to shine.
This is a great
statue of St. Francis.
Lawrence Ferlinghetti poem.
And a lot of old Italians were standing all around in the little side street just off the avenue, watching the wily workers who were hoisting up the statue with a chain and a crane and other implements. And a lot of young reporters in button-down clothes were taking down the words of one young priest who was propping up the statue with all his arguments. And all the while no bird sang any St. Francis passion, and while the lookers kept looking up at St. Francis with his arms outstretched to the birds which weren't there, a very tall and very purely naked young virgin with very long and very straight straw hair, and wearing only a very small bird's nest in a very existential place, kept passing through the crowd all the while, and up and down the steps in front of St. Francis, her eyes downcast all the while, and singing to herself.
That's a beautiful poem, and he likes a little bit of eroticism. Okay, and we don't need to worry about music. We'll go to the next one. Sample here. What do I got? God damn it.
What could she say to the fantastic
this is,
bear, and what could she say
this is from
the,
Coney Island.
And what could she say to
I'm
going to
cut in half some of these.
And what could she say to Mother after that time that she lay lush among the lolly flowers on that hot riverbank where ferns fell away in the broken air of the breath of her lover. And birds went mad and threw themselves from trees to taste, still hot upon the ground, the spilled sperm seed.
You know, the eroticism of him is wonderful.
What could she say to the fantastic Fooly Bear? And what could she say to Brother? And what could she say to the cat with future feet? And what could she say to Mother after that time that she lay lush among the lolly flowers on that hot riverbank where ferns fell away in the broken air of the breath of her lover? And birds went mad and threw themselves from trees to taste, still hot upon the ground, the spilled sperm seed.
There we go. We're going forward.
See, it was like this.
Come on, that ten. Here, we'll try something else here.
I have not lain with beauty all my life, telling over to myself its most rife charms. I have not lain with beauty all my life and lied with it as well, telling over to myself how beauty never dies but lies apart among the aborigines of art and far above the battlefields of love. It is above all that, oh yes, it sits upon the choicest of church steeples, up there where art directors meet to choose the things for immortality. And they have lain with beauty all their lives, and they have fed on honeydew and drunk the wines of paradise, so that they know exactly how a thing of beauty is a joy forever and forever.
John Keats.
And how it never, never quite can fade into a money-losing nothingness. Oh, no, I have not lain on beauty rest like this, afraid to rise at night for fear that I might somehow miss some movement beauty might have made. Yet I have slept with beauty in my own weird way, and I have made a hungry scene or two with beauty in my bed, and so spilled out another poem or two, and so spilled out another poem or two upon the marsh-like world.
We're going to pause here. Okay, we're pausing. Now, see how cosmopolitan is, and these are the books he published. I mean, Howl has some outrageous, language in it. You know, I'm sodomized the rubber of my, friends, and that's, it's amazing that Lawrence Ferlinghetti, this is Lawrence Ferlinghetti, we're going to go with that, we're going to do a little bit of Garrison Keillor interview, but are you getting it? This program is being done in homage of Lawrence Ferlinghetti, nobody else. Pledge the Talking Earth, okay? Pledge. KBOO.FM. Go ahead. You
/give.
Do what?
KBOO.FM/give.
Yeah, I'd send $10, and you wouldn't even notice it. It's two lattes or two micro brews or whatever. So, as you said, Patrick, City Lights Bookstore, and if you ever go to San Francisco, you go to North Beach, you go through Chinatown, and you get over to City Lights Bookstore, and you stop in at Vesuvio's. And so Portland has been almost as sophisticated as San Francisco, but it's been shut down here recently, and we're not going to do that. But KBOO is not shut down. We're just not in the station. This is social distancing, and this is... how many minutes we got, Patrick?
We got about 25 minutes.
Okay, well, we're moving. We're gonna sample a couple more, and then I'm going to turn on the Garrison Keillor thing. Is there anything you want to give a little bit?
No, this is a...
Okay, let's keep going here. Here. No, move ahead. 11. Is that 11?
Yeah.
And I'm going to cut some of these in half. The
wounded wilderness of Morris Graves is not the same wild west the white man found. It is a land that Buddha came upon from a different direction.
This is good.
It is a wild white nest in the true mad north of introspection, where falcons of the inner eye dive and die glimpsing in their dying fall all life's memory of existence, and with grave chalk wing draw upon the leaded sky a thousand threaded images of flight. It is the night that is their native habitat, these spirit birds with bled white wings, these droves of plover, bearded eagles, blind birds singing in glass fields, these moon-mad swans and ecstatic gander. One of those paintings that would not die. Its warring image, once conceived, would not leave the lidded ground, no matter how many times he hounded it into oblivion. Painting over it did no good. It kept on coming through the wood and canvas. And as it came, it cried at him, a terrible bedtime song, wherein each bed a grave, mine with unearthly alarm clocks, hollered horribly for lovers and sleepers.
He was very sophisticated, painting and art and the whole French deal. Come on. I'm going to chop some of these in half. That sucks.
Not like Dante discovering a commedia upon the slopes of heaven.
It's all right.
I would paint a different kind of paradiso, in which the people would be naked as they always are in scenes like that, except it is supposed to be a painting of their souls. But there would be no anxious angels telling them how heaven is the perfect picture.
Lawrence Ferlinghetti was a painter, and he did
and
postcards.
There would be no fires burning in the hellish holes below, in which I might have stepped, nor any altars in the sky except the fountains of the imagination.
Okay.
Don't let that horse eat that violin, cried Chagall's mother. But he kept right on painting and became famous and kept on painting the horse with violin in mouth. And when he finally finished it, he jumped up upon the horse and rode away, waving the violin, and then with a low bow gave it to the first naked nude he ran across.
Naked nude. I love his eroticism.
Attached.
It's cosmopolitan.
Don't constantly risking absurdity and death whenever he performs above the heads of his audience. The poet, like an acrobat, climbs on rhyme to a high wire of his own making, and balancing on high beams above a sea of faces, paces his way
the poet
on the other side.
That's
of
us
performing entrechats and sleight of foot tricks and other high theatrics, and all without mistaking anything for what it may not be. For he's the super realist who must perforce perceive taught truth before the taking of each stance or step in his supposed advance toward that still higher perch where beauty stands and waits with gravity to start her death-defying leap. And he, a little Charlie Chaplin man, who may or may not catch her fair eternal form, spread eagle in the empty air of existence.
Come on, move.
Kafka's castle stands above the world like a last bastille of the mystery of existence. Its blind approaches baffle us. Steep paths plunge nowhere from it. Roads radiate into air like the labyrinth wires of a telephone central through which all calls are infinitely untraceable. Up there, it is heavenly weather. Souls dance undressed together, and like loiterers on the fringes of a...
Now listen, Patrick, just quickly here, and I'm going to turn on the Garrison Keillor because you're going to hear a different... But I, what a sophisticated mind, though. What do you think? And that's why City Lights has 100 or 200.
There's a lot of references to old classics. There's references to Dante. He was referencing
yes.
He was referencing Kubla Khan by...
Morris Graves was one of the Seattle painters with Mark Tobey.
Yeah, and he's referencing painter. A lot of painters and artists as well.
He was a painter, though. And whoever's listening out there, this is homage to Lawrence Ferlinghetti, KBOO Radio, KBOO.FM/give. No, you're not going to hear this. And then I, we can kind of go out with him, but I want to make sure the time, how much is left, Patrick?
We got 17 minutes.
Okay.
Contact.
Now here's Garrison.
Fascinating group of writers who were looking for a publisher, who came to you as in a very short time one of the premier alternative publishers in America. There was New Directions, there was Grove Press, there was City Lights.
Well, we were just a little two-bit press. We weren't anywhere near equal those two.
Well,
so. New Directions was always my idea, my publishing ideal, and still is. Mm. I mean, New Directions was the press. After the Second World War, they were the avant-garde press in America, and they were the first to bring to this country Dylan Thomas, and the first to publish Tennessee Williams, William Carlos Williams, Ezra Pound, you name it. So naturally, this was my... my avant-garde ideal.
But you published a book in your Pocket Poets series. It was Pocket Poets number 4, which made you immediately famous across America, because you had the great good fortune to be arrested and charged with a crime.
I know.
Which is an honor that falls to few writers and few publishers, and fell to you.
It's hard to do that and get away with it.
Yeah.
And that was Allen Ginsberg's Howl.
Yes.
And Allen was never busted. He wasn't even in the country. It was myself and Shigeyoshi Burao, my original partner after Peter Martin. Peter Martin got divorced and went to New York and started the New Yorker bookstore about a year after we opened City Lights. But courtesy of the police, Allen Ginsberg got famous, and it put City Lights more or less on the map as a small-time publisher.
You were busted for obscenity, and you walked.
I walked.
You beat the rap.
Oh. Yes, we did. Courtesy of the American Civil Liberties Union, thank God for them. We didn't have any money for legal defense.
This is a damn interesting interview.
The tactic of the McCarthy era was for the government to bring charges or prosecute or persecute leftists and run them out of business.
But by your prosecution, you came to the attention of an enormous readership of junior high school boys in the Midwest, including myself, who felt persecuted ourselves, and so recognized you as an ally, we're not able to read Howell and fully absorb it or fully be get into the poem. Nonetheless, the fact that it had been prosecuted was a huge strike in your favor. in the eyes of the reader. This is a stroke of good luck that one could not arrange. Is this not
true? That's
true.
They were just one generation of dissident writers, which we published at City Lights. I mean, after the Beats, we published Charles Bukowski, who definitely didn't want to be associated with the Beats. We published, I don't know, Sam Shepard fits in there somewhere, and And we'd published a lot of earlier dissident writers before the Beats, so this was only one. I think without Ginsberg, there would have been no Beat Generation recognized. He really functions as a literary catalyst, much as Ezra Pound did for his generation, causing many unknown writers to get published for the first time and maybe would have never been published without his influence. And Alan would get invited to some university, he'd accept, but he said, well, you have to bring all these other people, so about six whole gang would come with him on stage. Without Ginsberg, who was not only a genius poet, but also a genius public relations man, without him, there would have been just separate great writers in the landscape, but there wouldn't have been any Beat Generation recognized as such, I think.
Anyone who published Charles Bukowski ought to get a Medal of Honor for doing that. First of all, because I love his poems, but also for the heroism of dealing with a very difficult man.
Yes. Well, I suppose you know Jim Harrison.
I do know Jim Harrison.
I mean, he comes from the Upper Peninsula, and I always thought there was a great parallel with Bukowski and Jim Harrison.
I never heard stories about Jim Harrison giving a poetry reading and throwing beer bottles at the audience.
Oh, yes. Well, he could be pretty raunchy, too, though, couldn't he?
What is the connection, Lawrence? Some say that this has mitigated somewhat among younger writers. One hopes that it has, but certainly for years there was a connection between artists and genius artists and a kind of self-destructiveness that was painful to people who cared about them, to see people of genius proceed in methodical ways to destroy themselves, most often with alcohol, but other ways as well.
Goes back to the whole romantic tradition, which in this case I believe began in the 19th century with the French poets, addicts, and deranged poets that tradition grew and grew. And so with the Beats, I think maybe Gregory Corso was the prime example of someone who destroyed himself. Allen Ginsberg is a very sane person and very sober in his many years, the last quarter of his life, say. But Corso he exemplified what you're talking about. And he's a great poet. He was a great poet, and he is buried next to Shelley in the Protestant cemetery in Rome. And he knew a powerful Roman woman who got him in there. And Gregory had to swear, he arranged this all before he died, he had to swear that he wasn't Catholic, because it was a Protestant cemetery. He told him he was Jewish.
Mm.
Gregorio Corso, Ebreo. And so I think he's down roasting in hell for all the people he there's only one way to describe it, all the people he fucked over. And he's looking at me saying, I pulled a fast one on you guys. So there he is next to Shelley and Keats. Shelley was his great hero.
Somehow you avoided this, Lawrence. You gave yourself the blessing of a good life. You gave yourself a business that would occupy you, and a noble business of bookselling, and you've enjoyed painting and women and wine and women and music and poetry. You're an example to the rest of us. What advice do you have for young, bright people with big ambitions to live their lives sensibly?
Well, what advice do you have?
Lawrence, arts, this is why I'm here this evening, is to learn this.
Well, I'm baffled by the question because I don't have any answers for that.
Okay, now that was really Garrison Keillor. I hated Lake Wobegon a lot of times, but he actually did have some feelings about literature. Garrison Keillor interviewing Lawrence Ferghetti, and he was probably 90 or something. He was very sharp. We'll do a little more here, but that's a great interview, and some of that was kind of fascinating, the history of City Lights and the American the history of American poetry, that's what this is, the poetry program. This is called The Talking Earth. There are other moderators on The Talking Earth, 10 p.m. Next Monday. Barbara LaMorticella will hold forth, and we have Dan Raphael, and then there maybe are a few others. I don't know, but it's got a long history. So I've always tried to make this, even with the glitches, I've always wanted this program to have different voices and different things. We probably won't put back on the Wolves. We're going to put on more Lawrence, and we're running probably out of time. But please pledge for Walt Curtis and Lawrence Ferlinghetti and the Beats and Patrick Bouchard, and you worked on the Warriors, and you know.
You don't have to, don't pledge for the Warriors. Pledge at kboo.fm/give and support KBOO. I wouldn't support the film The Warriors. Not the
I wouldn't either.
don't support that. It's already on YouTube. You can watch it if you want, but yeah, don't.
Well, we did a program for James Hanzig, who passed away, and he was a good guy, and you found it. It was a pretty good program, and you can go into our archives, and if you want to hear some of this stuff, as I said, Barbara LaMorticella did a great with the beat poet Bob Kaufman and City Lights, even. Stuff is in the archives, The Talking Earth, and then you pull up the date or something, don't you, Patrick, I guess?
You can pull up the date, or you could just type in Talking Earth and it'll come up.
Oh, you type in Talking Earth
into the search engine.
Well, you know, there is probably, OPB would not do this. Well, Garrison Keillor had enough balls, if I use that word, to let Lawrence Ferlinghetti hold forth. Yeah. And I think, how many minutes, Patrick?
You got about five.
Well, maybe we should give him the last words, you know, yeah. I mean the last song or the last poems. This has been a tribute to Lawrence Ferlinghetti. Go to City Lights. He's probably has a huge website himself, and you got a little history of American poetry and the dissident poets and the outsider poets and the drunken poets and the addict poets and the crazy poets. So Patrick Bouchard, I thank you very much, and remember, without a little money, the great community radio station, one of the oldest now, KBOO, Portland, Oregon, you're part of it, and you know how much diversity there is and how much free expression there has been on The Talking Earth, and it's been a great privilege and honor to be part of it. If you don't like it, if you don't like anyone else, do it for an old, thought he was homo, but he wasn't, probably, old character, outsider poet who was a post beat, Walt Curtis, and this has been The Talking Earth. Any last words? Give us some last words, kiddo. Give us some last word. We're going to scat sing out with Lawrence.
Try to learn the history of culture in this country. You know,
go ahead. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's always worth like reading the older, or listening to the older music, or reading like the sources of the musicians or the hip hop musicians or the poets that you like now or the writers you like now. It's always worth it.
Patrick, it's been a great honor to work with you, and we love KBOO, don't we? And I know we give them money.
and support KBOF.FM.
Well, I got 20 here. I don't know where it's going, but.
The Penny Candy Store beyond the L is where I first fell in love with unreality. Jelly beans glowed in the semi-gloom of that September afternoon.
It's a fake voice.
A cat upon the counter moved among the licorice sticks and Tootsie Rolls and oh boy gum. Outside, the leaves were falling as they died. A wind had blown away the sun. A girl ran in. Her hair was rainy. Her breasts were breathless in the little room. Outside, the leaves were falling, and they cried, too soon, too soon.
Come on.
The Penny Candy Store beyond the...
Damn it. Come on. The loop. The loop got us there.
Look at flowers, smell fruit, and the leaves had the look of loving. But half-assed drunken sailors staggered through her sleep, scattering semen over the virgin landscape.
Eroticism.
Her heart put above.
We're after 10 p.m.
Heard the green birds singing from the other side of silence.
Just like in the loop.
She loved to look at flowers.
Oh no, it's not a loop.
Fruit, and the leaves had the look of loving. But half-assed drunken sailors staggered through.
It is a loop.
Scattering semen.
It's a loop. Here we go. We're winding down here.
Johnny Nolan has a patch on his ass. Kids chase him through screen door summers, through the back streets of all my memories. Somewhere a man laments upon a violin. A doorstop baby cries and cries again, like a ball bounced down steps, which helps the afternoon arise again. To a moment of remembered hysteria. Johnny Nolan has a patch on his ass. Kids chase him.
It's a terrible accent, but let's try one more.
The Widder Fogliani, otherwise known as Belladonna, the Italian lady of American distraction, the Widder Fogliani was a merry old soul. She had whiskers on her soul. But she had a hard coming of it. That time I beat her at her own game, which was painting mustaches on statues in the Borghese Gardens at 3 a.m, and nobody the wiser if she ever gave some stray Cellini a free Christmas goose.
We're almost done. Lawrence Farley, wherever you are, we love you.
Squat upon the beach of love. Among Picasso mandolins struck full of sand, and buried cat's paws that know no sphinx, and picnic papers, dead crab's claws, and starfish prints. We squat upon the beach of love, among the beach mermaids with their bawling babies and bald husbands, and homemade wooden animals with ice cream spoons for feet, which cannot walk or love except to eat. We squat upon the brink of love, and are secure as only squatters are, among the puddled leavings of the salt sex's tides, and the sweet semen rivulets and limp buried peckers in the sand's soft flay. And still we laugh, and still we run, and still we throw ourselves upon love's boats, but it is deeper and much later than we think. And all goes down, and all our love boys fail us, and we drink and drown.
You've been listening to Talking Earth.
Talking Earth, and Lawrence Ferlinghetti gave you some talk.
is KBOO Portland.
Do you miss going to the theater? Looking for some drama? Then tune in for The Strange Case of Nick M., an all-new radio play by Imago Theater on Monday, May 3rd at 10 p.m. Listeners will be taken on Imago's trippy